Hello and welcome back to Corgi Town USA podcast. I'm Candy. In my lap is Chuckles.
I'm Catherine, and at my feet is Digby. Running around here is little Mortimer Barnabas and Booger.
Booger, the little lady.
The little lady.
We thought we would just pipe in here and say welcome to part two about what I learned about having a DM dog. Thank you for sticking through us. We wanted to break this up into two parts because I just went through the journey, just concluded with our dear sweet Hammer, and Miriam Valer, who wrote Another New Normal, has done it twice. And our friend Tani with Shade Out DM had to go through the journey, which is how she birthed Shade Out DM.
Yes.
So as you can imagine, we all had a lot to say. So we were splitting this up into two parts. So this is our welcome back. Thanks for listening and welcome to part two. We hope that you enjoy. We hope you learned something. Reach out to us if we can help.
Thank you.
You know, yeah, my vet had never heard of this. And I just to clarify that, I don't really fault the vets because they're not specialists in certain areas. The neurologist is a specialist, and every single neurologist is very well aware of DM. Yeah. But the vets have to deal with like everything, you know. I mean, this is not a specialized thing. Where what we do is educate them so they go, oh, this looks familiar. Why don't we look into this? And that kind of thing. And then offer the support group for the people that they end up getting the presumptive diagnosis. I never can say that word. But yeah, as far as the journey itself, we can make their lives so much better by giving them the tools they need and everything. And now there is that support group that you're not abnormal for feeling the things that you feel while yeah. you're going, you know, in the middle of the night. Oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I'm so tired. Could you please just go to sleep? Please, you know? And it's like, oh, well, turn a fan on them. Oh my gosh, that was like the answer. You know, like, now I can sleep for a couple more hours, you know? But when they're gone, there is guilt because you just don't know. It's the guilt of like not knowing. But I try to help you guys know that, like, please know that it could have been so much scarier.
Yeah.
And
well, and that I want to say that, and I want to take this time to say that I, you two, both of you, are the perfect guests for this episode. I could not have managed like I did without the support of people that already went through this painstaking process without the guidance, information, and support. Because Tani has talked about, oh, it's so, like, I don't want to call it irony, but you said, Candy, you came to us to try to spread awareness because of, this is corgis, it's affect corgis, yeah. And then here you are dealing with it. And to me, the word's not so much ironic as it is poetic. There had to be a reason for that for me. The reason is that I can help others as well and join that support and try to share this message for anybody going through it. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for you. I'm never going to be able to put it in enough words.
Yes.
Well, you don't need to because you made it easy for us to help you, right? But
right,
it just sucks that you're a part of our village. Yep.
You said that perfectly. I mean, you know, there is something about this disease and the way it brings people together. I remember one day I was out with Sassy in her stroller and we were walking around the park I lived near. And I saw a woman, and I have a photo of this in my book, but I saw a woman with an almost identical stroller with a boxer. And I could just tell by the way that boxer was laying that he had DM. I mean, it's just once you have DM that you've dealt with it, you can just see it. I mean, there's just nothing else that looks quite like that. And so I walked up to her and I said, excuse me, does your beautiful boxer have DM? She just started to cry and gave me the biggest hug. It was such a relief to her to talk to somebody that knew what DM was and understood at a really core level what she was going through, even though, I mean, she didn't tell me her whole story, but I mean, it's like we had dogs that were in similar conditions, and there's a power to all of us joining together to support one another. And I mean, there's one part of me that would like to never hear the word DM again and never talk about it and to just like burn my book and, you know, just completely erase that.
Yes.
But I feel like I have a voice for a reason. And, you know, and it's like Sassy came into my life. I wasn't even looking for a dog or a corgi at the time I adopted her. And in fact, the first few days that I had her, I thought it was the worst thing I'd ever done because she was such a bossy. She was a handful.
Spirited. We call it spirited.
That would probably be a good way to put it. And I mean, I remember thinking, Sassy, that's the dumbest name I've ever heard for a dog. And then it's just like, oh no. After a few days, it's like, oh no. That is the perfect name for this dog, because she lived up to that every minute of her life that I had her. But it's like we collectively have a knowledge about this disease that even like Tawny said, the average vet doesn't. We've lived it, and I think we all, as much as we can, to support people coming into this journey. I think it's important because there's just things that you're not going to hear from a vet. I mean, like when you were talking about the anticipatory grief, Candy, one of the things that I found was that I was grieving. I mean, it wasn't just grieving the fact that my dog is going to die fully paralyzed. It was like I was grieving she doesn't have use of her right hind leg. Now she's going to lose her left hind leg. And then she's going to lose her bark and her core muscles. I mean, I was grieving all of the individual stages that I knew she was going to go through. And, you know, that on top of, and at some point I'm going to say goodbye. I mean, that's a lot to be processing. But, you know, my philosophy with animals has always been, I'd rather let them go a week early than a minute too late. And I just, you know, try to send them out on a good note. But it is hard. It's never easy, even if your dog is desperately ill. I mean, I've had some dogs with cancer, you know, that were really sick when I had to let them go. I mean, that's painful. But you feel, you kind of make peace with it because you know they're really sick. But to have a dog that's still eating and bright-eyed and, you know, engaged with you, yeah, I mean, it sucks.
We talk about when it's time. You know, we did an episode, I think it's season 3, with Dr. John Waterhouse, and we say, let's talk about when it's time, because it's hard.
Yeah.
But with DM, I think what's different is a lot of the times as parents, we hear people say, they'll let you know. They'll let you know. I don't know how many times I've heard that in my life. They'll let you know. DM, they don't let you know until it's too late.
Right.
You don't know. You have to. That to me is a big takeaway on one of the differences.
Yeah. And that is huge. I was planning on having a necropsy done with Sassy. And so I'd been communicating with Dr. Coates at the University of Missouri. And fortunately, I hate to use the word fortunately, but I think in this case it was a gift. Sassy got bronchitis about 3 weeks before I set her free. And I communicated with Dr. Coates about that, going, is this DM? And she's like, well, it could be. But she said, the reality is now that her diaphragm is not working well, you know, and if she's just picked up a bug and got bronchitis, it's going to be harder and harder for her lungs to function correctly. Yeah. And so that's when I thought we had a few more months, but because of that, I sped up the timeline and euthanized her then at the, you know, like 3 weeks later. And I'm glad I did, because by that day that I let her go, I mean, she was getting really, really tired. I mean, it was like I saw a really quick decline. And I think, honestly, Tawny, we were headed right into respiratory failure like you were dealing with KC. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, Dr. Coates gave me that warning. She's like, it can turn really quick. So better, you do not want them to go into respiratory failure or widespread organ failure. You just don't. And so, I mean, I think Sassy was right on the edge of that. I suspect if I'd waited another day or two, we would have been there. So, and when her necrotizing results came back, I mean, they did say it was advanced DM. So, I mean, I know we were pushing the envelope on that. And so, yeah, as hard as it is to let them go when they are still really engaged, I mean, by the time the DM has reached into the front legs, I think that's a reasonable time to start thinking about it, you know. Yeah. But I do want to say, I think whenever you think about letting them go is an okay time, because the reality is some people can't physically carry their dog. You know, some people have their own disabilities or health issues that they're dealing with, and they may need to consider letting that dog go, you know, 6 months into the journey instead of 2 years into the journey. And I think we need to make that discussion, you know, with people, that whenever it's too hard for you emotionally, physically, financially, I mean, there's a lot of considerations with the DM dog. And I mean, some of us, you know, stuck it out, you know, through the whole journey, but I don't want anybody to ever feel like they're...
Don't put that pressure on yourself.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's like, because sometimes there's circumstances where you need to let that dog go even sooner. And I think that's okay, because I don't think from the dog's perspective, they're counting the days. You know,
and that's just, no, and the other side of that is that it's how good is it for your dog? We talk about them picking up their energy.
Right.
If you are so despondent because you are unable to put forth that care, that's right. Not good for them either.
No.
Right. So that's another, if you know, we always put the dogs first here. If you're still doing that, you're probably doing that. That's where that guilt comes from. It's, well, is it really that good for them if you can't administer that care?
Right.
Then you're making a loving choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's just layer after layer after layer.
So much.
I mean, we could talk for 8 hours about this, and I don't think we would even uncover everything. So
No,
but I do want to take a moment before we egress here. I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that I learned in this process, things that I kind of expected. I expected, Tawny, you were talking about it's gradual. You kept hearing that it's gradual. The thing I learned with Hammer's journey is that it would be gradual, whoa, now we've made a big change all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And then gradual, whoa, now we made another big change. And that was kind of his trajectory. I kind of learned with him, which makes that dangerous, right? If you ask too late. And I was a little bit comforted that when I did make the decision, nobody said, are you sure it's too early? Nobody said that. Are you sure it's not too early? Nobody said that. Everybody was like, okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. And so that kind of helped me a little bit, but that's kind of where that danger is. And I believe it was our friend Dana who helps with Shade Out DM. She's taken the journey, and she said, that is the thing with DM, is you have a really good day and they're happy and they're smiling and they're rolling around in their car, whatever the case is. And then the next day, can't breathe.
Right.
You've waited too long. And that's with Hammer, his front started to go. But some of the things I learned about their not being able to regulate temperature, that Tawny had kind of taught me that, but then I kind of realized what that meant.
Yeah.
But one of the things that really got me on the emotional level was he had stress vocalizations. Mm. And it got to be
anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was worse and worse and worse. And it would emotionally, I would get infuriated. And it wasn't so much that he was making noises that I cannot manage this. I can't make him more comfortable. What am I, how can I do that? It was a frustration of, I can't do better for him. Right. And that was kind of, that was something I learned that was new to me.
Yes.
You know, and another thing I want to talk about is there is a little bit of gaslighting in the community. And I'm going to start by this. We love our good breeders, you preservation breeders out there doing good work. Thank you so much. That's how we get our wonderful, beautiful corgis. But there are some that think it's not a big deal. They don't have to deal with the disease once the dog is advanced in age and it starts to pop up in 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. But also, the argument is that I always try to listen to it with an open mind. Okay, I don't breed, so let me give you that. I've yet to be convinced, and it's not even from an emotional stance. It's okay. Well, educate me on what I have wrong here. Well, just because they're at risk does not mean they will develop it. You still have not convinced me that that's okay to breed that at-risk dog. That's my perspective. So you get the gaslighting. It's not a big deal. They may not. And if they do, it's fine. And I say this not to lambast anyone or to throw anyone under the bus, but just to say these are things that have been told to me, that have been told to others within the community that have heard the same things. These are narratives that are out there.
Yes.
So I just want to shed some light on these are things that get said. Here's why I disagree. I'm much more emotional about it now than I was before because I've been through it. But there's also a little bit from some members of the veterinary community. And again, like Tawny was saying, we love our vets. Thank you so much. We are so grateful for you. You've saved our dogs. You keep our animals healthy. We're so grateful. But I remember my vet is wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful. But she has some other doctors in her practice. And at one point, I brought Hammer in for routine blood work. And the doctor was not his vet. It was one of the other doctors at the clinic. Wouldn't even come in the room. She says, how do you know it's DM? If you don't know that it's DM, there's no way to tell. There's no definitive diagnosis. I'm not going to come in and treat your dog for it. This is something that happens. And I tell someone about this and I learn about this happening. There is some gaslighting that takes place with this illness because of the mysteriousness of how it's diagnosed. We only know if they're at risk and are presenting symptoms. That's kind of how we can diagnose it. Definitive is what everyone wants because they want to be able to argue that narrative. Does it matter? I don't think so. I think it.
No, it doesn't.
This is emotional and okay, we have these presentation of symptoms. Why is it so important that we have to operate? Why can't we operate on the assumption and manage that way? Right.
Yeah. Or on the contrary, they take it the other direction and give advice of, well, then you just need to euthanize them now or whatever. There's nothing you can do and it's over with. And oh my gosh, like, where's the compassion and bedside manner there? Right. So, and that's kind of where we've seen a lot. You're absolutely right. And I think it is more personal to you, Candy, right now. I know you and I were talking, and because this is a fresh wound, it's raw for you. It is a quick trigger of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they said that. And it's
how, like, dare you?
Yeah. And so you want to fix those things, and really it comes down to education, right? And so that's why we do what we do. This is our why. But it is so important to basically, like, with people, it's ALS, and that means like hospice. And so we go back to what Kat's saying, in that, like, there's like this preconceived idea of how things should be accepted or what you should, you know? And so I know, like, as soon as somebody says the word hospice, it's like, oh gosh, they're dying tomorrow. You know, like, it's just we better make your stuff. Had somebody say this to their father, which was, you better go home, make the proper arrangements. You better, you know, put everything in place because you only have a few days left, you know? And it was like, holy cow, wait a minute. There's gotta be, and you're just shocked. Like, what else do I do with this? Where do I turn? What can I do? Is there anything, you know? And so like, Miriam, you'd start researching, you start looking, you start digging and oh my gosh, I can't give up, you know? But some people do give up. Some people can't go and research, you know, and look for things. Instead, like everybody's personality is a little bit different.
Right.
I like to think that like with hospice, if we can, like what you're saying, Candy, like educate people to normalize hospice a little bit more. You could be in hospice 3 years, you know, it could still be a long time. And then like coming up with like things to do that help a little bit, if you can, with that anticipatory grief. Like, that's so hard, the anticipatory grief. We did Corgi Beach Day, and Kat and Candy. Candy had told me a couple weeks before, the one thing I really want to do is get Hammer down to the beach, because he loves the beach. I really want to get him down to the beach.
Yeah.
And we'd gone all day doing the events and doing it, you know, and you're slammed with people coming all the time. And so we can put on this brave face while we're busy, 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 busy. And it came to pack up time. And I said, go ahead and take him down to the beach. We'll handle it here. And I think it was a little bit of like, I know I really want to do that, but I also don't know if I really want to do that because I know what I'm going to be facing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kat, you were wonderful. You said, come on, Candy, let's go. And you guys did. And I just, that tore my heart out. I was okay until then. And I just was like, oh my gosh, looking at you guys taking him down to the beach. And the whole time Candy was thinking, this is the last time. This is the last trip to the beach.
Oh yeah. I completely fell apart at the seams.
Yep.
I completely
and rightfully so. It's yes. Okay. But yeah. But the whole hospice care and making sure you get to do the things on your bucket list, and you know, that's become okay in society now, and yes. And that's awesome that has become okay to like make sure that the bucket list is a thing now, you know. But I think like overall, as soon as you hear the word hospice, it's a downhill slide from there, or it's a, you know, and so the dismissiveness that we get when we say, oh, I want to do this. People don't know how to handle that. Right. And so then you also feel abandonment, right? I mean, like at some point, not your close friends, but other people, they don't know how to behave around you. They don't know what to say to you. They oh gosh, that's so sad. I'm so sorry. Everybody says, I'm so sorry. Like they don't mean I'm so sorry. They mean like, I'm sorry that you're dealing with that and I don't know what to say. So they don't know how to treat you. So a lot of times they disappear, right? So there's a part, there's so many layers and parts like you guys are saying to all of this, but I think you handled it perfectly. You handled all of it perfectly. I mean, we can't take away the pain, and what we have to remember is that the pain, my mom always says, it hurts so bad because you love so much. And that's how you know that you love. And, I remember crying and telling her like, I just don't want to love anymore. I don't want to care. It hurts too much. I don't like it. But yeah, I mean, they take a piece of our heart. Doesn't mean that we can't, regrow our heart. I'll always have a spot for Casey, and like she always will have her own spot in my heart. She was so dang determined to make sure, but my heart grew larger and she sent me Layla. And so like, I mean, I've had other dogs and animals and everything I've tried to do to like plan it out and everything, and it still hurts. But I will tell you that reliving it with each and every person, like holding their hand through the journey, I fall for all their pups too, especially Hammer. Darn you let me hold him and get to know him and babysit him and take care of him, and man, oh, losing him was hard. for me. But
no, sorry.
No.
Shame on me.
I'm blessed. I don't mean that at all. I'm absolutely grateful. And there's something to that too that we didn't mention is actually getting to hold another DM corgi. I could hold. I held other corgis, and their full on muscle is the same. Candy hasn't gotten to experience this yet, but the minute that you hold another DM baby, it is. That's what I needed. It was a week after Casey had left, and Kim came out with Toddy and said, I want you to get to hold Toddy. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank you. That means so much to me. And it's that empty arm syndrome. And I have Spencer. I could hold Spencer. He's a different body type, you know?
Yeah.
And the minute that she picked up Toddy and handed her to me and I'm holding her, that was so like touching on my heart. I can't even describe. It was sadness, happiness, every single emotion at once. And the feeling, the touch, feel the weight in the in your arms. It was healing for me, and I just cried into her fur, and it helped so much, you know. And I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
That's perfect. This episode will be in two parts. So I knew this would be a long conversation, and I don't want to rush us. There is so much to say, but I think that that's a good way to end it. But thank you both so much. I mean, again, Tawny, I'm never going to be able to put into words how much you mean to me, the organization means to me, everything you've done for us and Hammer. And Miriam, thank you so much for sharing what you've done, what you've gone through with your book and helping others. And I don't know. I love you guys.
Well, Miriam, we still rope her back in all the time to help with stuff. And I'm grateful for all that you do, Miriam, because, I mean, you're constantly being talked about.
I don't think I would have ever asked for this journey at all. Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like it's forced me to grow. And it would just be wrong not to give back to other people going through it. I mean, it's just like whether I frame that as this is how I honor Sassy's legacy or, you know, whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter how I frame it. It's just like, this is such a heartfelt journey. I mean, it's just different than how we normally take care of our dogs. And I just feel like we do need to give back to each other and support one another as we can. And I know for some people, they just have to walk away from it. It's just too hard. But I feel like I can handle those harder emotional conversations. I'll be crying right alongside of you when you're making those tough decisions. But I just want to be a resource. If somebody, you know, if they resonate with something I wrote in my book and they want to reach out to me, you know, I welcome those contacts, because if I can just ease their, you know, their struggle a little bit, then it makes it worthwhile what I went through.
And I'm going to call out Kat. Kat was right there holding my hand when we had to say goodbye.
I was.
Yeah. It
was an honor.
Those are good kind of friends to have.
Yeah.
Okay.
None of the journeys that were ever asked to be on in our lifetime or any of the journeys that we've ever picked. And yet every journey that we're on in our lifetime makes us that much better of a person if we choose to, Tawny, you had said that Candy went through this journey perfectly, and she did. And I want to say to our dear listeners, dear viewers, going through whatever DM journey or other difficult journey that you're going through, it you are going through it perfectly. There is no wrong way, because you are going through it, and that is really the ultimate, that you are taking each step each and every day, whatever decision you make, whatever path you choose, it is right and perfect for you and for your fur baby. And they know it. Unconditionally, your baby knows that you made the right and perfect decision for everyone involved. Don't ever, ever doubt that about yourselves.
Thanks, Kat. I will share in the description box the Shade Out DM member support group, as well as how to get a copy of Miriam's book, and also how you can get a hold of Kat for her grief counseling that she's doing with her program. This was a heavy episode, but thank you for sticking with us. Episodes, part one and part two. Thank you for sticking with us and listening. I hope this helps you. Please reach out to us if you need further support or help. We have the resources to direct. And thank you for listening to us. Miriam, thank you for your time. Tawny, thank you for your time. Ladies, love you to pieces. Yes. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Doing this for everyone.
Of course. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks again. We will see you next week with a lighter episode. Yeah. All things corgi, pet parent. Let us know what you thought of this episode. We hope it helps you. If you want to share your journey, drop it down in the comments. We want to live that legacy for you and with you. With that, Candy, Kat, Chuckles, Mortimer, Digby, and Booger, we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.